Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:21 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is November 30th, and I thought we'd kick off with Bitcoin because it had a pretty explosive move and is closing at a new all-time high. The previous peak was around 19,511, I believe, and it surmounted that today, but it's closing right in the region of that peak. And that's a big psychological level, and not least because it's below the big round 20,000. So, of course, there has been some reticence around paying all-time highs for the asset. But the bigger picture here is that there's an increasing bullish factor in that it moves a lot, so it attracts people into it because of the momentum. Volatility tends to work in both directions, but on the way up, it definitely tends to suck in investors from all over the world. And of course, because Bitcoin is a truly global phenomenon, then it really does mean all over the world. Then when we think about, well, what are the use cases? Well, the security element is certainly part of it, that it's outside the financial system. And when we think about the fact that the dollar index was at a new reaction low on Friday, but it was a little bit steadier in here today. And I think that's also a factor in some of the stock market performance, that we've had some easing in stock market performance because we've just had a very impressive month. I think it's the best month for the Dow Jones in over 30 years. So there is at least the potential for some pause and consolidation. But the bigger picture, of course, is that governments all over the world are really only interested in one thing, which is reflation, and they're going to spend as much money as is required to achieve those goals. It's just unconscionable that they're going to leave millions and millions of people out of work indefinitely because they simply can't afford to keep paying outsized unemployment benefits. So there is a determination to get the economies reflated. But at the same time, there is also this drive towards digital currencies. China is certainly looking into that. And from everything I've read about the digital renminbi, it looks to be nothing more than a ration book. And the way it is constructed is that it will basically allow for domestic transactions. And they may then also spin it out for international transactions. But that's a very different prospect from what is in fact being suggested right now. Nonetheless, when we think about the renminbi, it has the benefit of having reasonably high interest rates behind it. So it doesn't tend to hold any kind of weakness. And China has demonstrated a willingness to allow it to appreciate. Now, the big question then is, well, how long is that going to remain the case? Obviously, this enthusiasm for buying the cryptocurrencies is in part because of the momentum, in part because of the security element, and the fact that it's outside of the financial system. But there is the additional point that the majority of Bitcoin are mined in China. And China's willingness to allow the renminbi to appreciate is something that has taken some of the focus away from Bitcoin. On the other hand, if China were to allow their currency or force their currency to devalue, then the bullish case for Bitcoin might be even further enhanced. And that would presumably then also create some argument as to exactly what the Chinese government might do to try and arrest the advance of Bitcoin, and particularly if it were to become a competing force to its own digital currency ambitions. One thing that is perhaps worth considering against that background is the fact that the leading decliners on the Hang Seng today were the Chinese oil companies, but not because oil was in negative territory. When we think about CNOOC, for example, in Hong Kong, it pulled back in a very dynamic manner, and that was because the Trump administration is or has widened the number of Chinese companies that it is banning people from buying. Now, it hasn't become official yet, but it is looking increasingly likely that CNOOC and SMMC will also be on that. That's the China Semiconductors Company. Of course, that will make the lives of these companies considerably more difficult, and particularly for the oil companies, because it may also preclude some of the suppliers, U.S. suppliers, from selling them the equipment they need. And they've been drilling quite a lot in the South China Sea, and obviously that's a flashpoint in terms of potential future geopolitical conflict. So it does suggest that there are risks here. And then when we think about the fact that we've also had some of the worst performers on the NASDAQ today were some of those Chinese ADRs. So Pinduoduo, for example, was down, but it was able to recoup some of its loss. So perhaps investors are thinking, or at least trying to differentiate, the kinds of companies that would have got any kind of overt or even perhaps covert relationship with the Chinese military and those that don't. And that, I think, is a rather dangerous way of investing, because when we are trying to parse what the political ambitions are of either administration, then it's rather difficult to think about what the actual outcomes might be. But if China is worried that this relationship with the USA is going to get worse, well, they may be less inclined to allow their currency to appreciate. And the Asia dollar index is a little bit overbought in the short term, and it was in negative territory today. So we may be on the cusp of seeing some pause and consolidation there as well. Against a background where Bitcoin was really very firm, gold prices were in negative territory, but not in an especially dynamic manner. Nonetheless, it's still pulling back, and we haven't got real evidence yet that anything other than short-term support has been found. It has been off its lows on two consecutive days, but there's been a distinct absence of upward dynamics. If we go back and think about the low back in March, there were very clear upward dynamics, and they clearly demonstrated that a low was in. We just haven't seen that yet. There's been a preponderance of downward dynamics since August, and until that changes, then we won't have real confirmation that gold has in fact found a low. Then when we think about silver, well, it does tend to be high beta gold, but it was well off its lows in here today. It's almost unwound most or all of its overextension relative to the trend mean. One of the most important things is that silver does tend to outperform gold in the second psychological perception stage of a bull market. Gold tends to outperform in the early portion of the bull market, and then as people see the confirmation of higher prices overall, they start looking for better value opportunities, catch-up plays, more leverage, and that brings them to silver. And silver then tends to outperform gold for the remainder of the bull market. It starts at the beginning of the acceptance stage and goes all the way through into the mania stage. That's exactly what we saw during the last bull market, and it does appear to be unfolding again on this occasion. So the fact that silver is still above its trend mean and is still above, I think, more importantly, the psychological $20 level, that is really quite comforting. In much the same fashion that gold and then the big gold miners went first, silver and the small gold miners went second, Bitcoin went first, and then the somewhat larger altcoins went after it. So that was Ethereum, and that's up back up to $600 in here today, so a $100 range in less than a week. And then we're now also starting to see interest in the smaller altcoins. So things like Ripple have done spectacularly well in the space of the last 10 days. And again, this demand for the leverage offered by catch-up plays is something that we see, and when speculative interest starts to rise in any asset class. Then when we think about, what are the catch-up plays that are potentially going to be important next year? Well, oil is one of them. And it was in negative territory today, but off its lows. And so far, it is holding the breakout from that range that persisted between June and October. I don't believe that we're going to see oil prices substantially above $80 anytime soon, but neither are they likely to fall back below 30. With potential that sanctions could inhibit supply growth from China, then that will increase demand for inflows from somewhere else. There's obviously a great deal of enthusiasm around the world about what the prospects are for renewable energy, but there is a large quantity of infrastructure is going to have to be built before any of that really gets brought online. And that leaves ample room for a recovery in energy prices and for those companies to, invest in diversification and, or at least an attempt to subvert the massive regulatory change that is threatening their business models, which I think arguably has been fully priced in with the massive decline in share prices already this year. There really aren't that many sectors that are still in the region of their lows. Now, one thing that I think is particularly interesting right now is that we can think about the fact that we've had this incredible rebound from the lows back in March. And the lows in March approximated the number of shares that were trading below their trend means. It was very similar to what we had in 2008 and 2009. Following such a big decline for a large number of shares, then we also tend to see a very significant snapback, and we are now coming towards the end of that snapback. So now there's likely to be some differentiation. But the most important thing is that the snapback is usually the confirmation that we're back in a new bull market environment overall. So the big declines into the lows for the number of shares trading above their respective trend means, that's generally it generally coincides with a bear market. And then the big move on the upside, like we saw in 2009, or very similar, like the move that we saw from the lows in 2002 all the way up to the peaks in 2003-04, that is generally the confirmation of the beginning of a new bull market. But after the big short covering rally that we've had this year, we're likely to move into a more modest pace of advance next year. It would be virtually impossible, for example, for Apple to go from $2 trillion to $4 trillion next year in terms of its market cap. And that's probably going to open up the way for other sectors to do better. And it's quite likely that we're now going to start to see the number of shares trading above their trend means starting to deteriorate, if not right away, probably by the end of the year and into the beginning of next year. That would be really quite normal, because we'll definitely see that not every hotel chain will recover, not every airline will recover, and there will of course be some clear champions inside both of those sectors. Not every retailer will recover, but some will be champions within their sectors. And it is those that hold their breakouts, those that really tend to do the best at not just recovering in a very short period of time, but holding breakouts during this period of transition from winners to losers, strongholders to our weak holders to strongholders. Those are generally the candidates for the companies that do best in the aftermath of a big recession and a big shock in the market. Obviously, when we go back and think in 2020 hindsight, at the companies that did best after the credit crisis in 2008. We can think about the fact that the number of companies trading above their respective trend means had bottomed in 2008, and then it surged back in 2009. Well, Amazon, for example, in that period after June of 2009 through to September, broke on the upside. And it was at a new all-time high in late 2009, whereas the rest of the market was really only just starting to belly and recover. Well, as we look at what's going on right now, well, it certainly did fantastically well in the period during the decline, but less so this right now. Whereas we've certainly seen that the commodities sector had pulled back really very sharply and then has recouped all of the decline and pushed on to new recovery highs. When we think about the mining sector overall, well, we're presented with a very similar situation. The FTSE 350 mining index is right back in the region of that psychological 20,000 level. Mid-cap sectors, small-cap sectors globally are all exhibiting relative strength relative to large caps. Then when we think about the stock market indices that are breaking on the upside and extending their breakouts, Japan's Nikkei is a very clear example. It has very emphatically broken out of what is effectively a three-year range. That was a big first step above the base, and it is now in a new bull market. Taiwan, South Korea are in very similar conditions, and then we have the Indian market as well. It hasn't been making the same number of headlines as other markets, but it is at a new all-time high. And that is also a very impressive rebound off the lows in March. So there is the clear potential here that we may see some pause in consolidation in the short term, but these are among the candidates that are likely to do best, because everybody knows that it is the big countries that have accumulated the greatest quantity of debt this year, and they don't have a ready plan for how to get rid of it. So they're going to devalue their currencies. When people are desperate for growth, then emerging markets have growth. They naturally grow faster. They also have demographics very much on their sides. And in this occasion, they have much better debt ratios as well. So it looks increasingly likely that it is Asia is going to do well, and the commodity producers, particularly in Latin America, will also do well in the coming years, because there is going to be a massive infrastructure boom, whether that is to replace aging infrastructure or to pioneer a new energy environment in terms of renewables. This is extraordinarily expensive, and it is potentially on par with the kind of massive infrastructure development that drove the last commodity bull market, which was the entrance of China into the WTO. When we think about the determination of both the Europeans and Chinese to go carbon neutral within 30 years, then the quantity of infrastructure that needs to be built in order to achieve those goals is literally beyond imagination. And it is something that will require a great deal of copper in particular. So copper prices were in positive territory today. Although they didn't hold all of the advance and they are a little overbought in the short term, so we may see some consolidation, but it is quite likely that copper is going to be a buy the dips type of market for the foreseeable future. And I think with that, I will leave you for the week, or for today, I should say, and wish all the best to all of you.